Yeah, and we thank the listeners who comment, and certainly even before we end the show, we just want to thank Dawn for being so open and sharing, and it's in community that support will be found. So we were talking to you, Dawn, about trying to see where you were emotionally when you had to make that decision about having no children and having to have a hysterectomy. And whilst I say that, let me hasten to add that not every woman wants to have children. This is a discussion that I had before. We were talking about hysterectomies, and some person was a little enraged, you know, that the thought in the room was that every woman wanted to have children, but not everyone wants to have children. So we're thinking about you as a lady who wanted to have children.
Okay, so actually I was that late. I was that person. I actually didn't want to have children. But I mean, that was at that point in time, I was just so fed up with the pain that I just wanted to do anything, whatever it took, to get some kind of relief. I did still have a lot of tossing in my mind, because after talking to some of the women that I would have consulted, my mother included, I would have heard, you know, like how passionate they were about having children, and then considering maybe this could change for me in future times, maybe my mind will change towards wanting to have children. But honestly, at that time, it was just a matter of, I just don't want this pain anymore. And so I would have talked to a series of women who would have actually gone through the hysterectomy process. Like I said, my mom was one that I spoke to. And basically, almost, I would say 90% of the stories that I heard, or feedback that I heard, was that the hysterectomy was the best decision that these women ever made in life. and their life really started and blossomed and flourished afterwards. There was only maybe one or two that maybe just said either nothing changed, or basically that nothing changed after that. And so I guess in my mind, being a numbers person, that's kind of how I made my decision. But in terms of the support that I got from my family and friends, my family was fairly whatever I wanted to do, they were supportive of. Because at the end of the day, we have to realize that the women that are going through this, it's them that's going through it. It's not anybody else. And so every decision that is brought up to them, or any suggestion that's brought up to them, it's not you that's going to be living with it at the end of the day. It's them, right? So they really have to make, or we have to make, the decisions for ourselves. And so that I kind of took a leap of faith, I guess, and I went along with it. That's basically my headspace leading up to the hysterectomy. I kind of forget if there was another part of the question.
No, that's okay. So we go back into technicalities again, and certainly for hysterectomy, if it's indicated, there are several reasons for women to have hysterectomies. But generally speaking, Dr. Yarbrough, what are some of the complications that can arise as a result of having a hysterectomy? And what are some of the measures that doctors, or more correctly, surgeons, tend to put into place to prevent these complications?
Okay. Well, from a complication standpoint, a hysterectomy, there are different ways that you can do a hysterectomy. So the complications can vary. You can have a hysterectomy through a laparoscopy as well. So you can have a laparoscopic hysterectomy. You can have the more traditional abdominal hysterectomy, where you make the bikini cut on the abdomen. And then you can also have a vaginal hysterectomy. And again, like you said, it depends on the organ process, what the pelvis looks like at that time, if there's been multiple other surgeries in the future, how big the uterus is, if there are fibroids there. There's a lot of factors that will help you decide, or help the physician decide, which surgery to perform. With endometriosis, most physicians will either do the laparoscopic or the total abdominal hysterectomy. And I say the laparoscopic because the laparoscopic hysterectomies still give you that microscope of the camera to look closely to the pelvic walls and to remove as much of the endometriosis as possible. But you can still do that with the abdominal hysterectomy as well. What you're doing is just removing the womb or the uterus only. And it depends on the patient's age, obviously. In younger women whose ovaries are completely normal, we tend to leave the ovaries in as long as there's no evidence of cancer or any abnormalities in those ovaries. And that's because they have several years of before menopause. So we don't want to put them into menopause too early. With the abdominal hysterectomies, your complications usually include pain afterwards, bleeding, possible bleeding and infection. There's a risk of injury to the bowels as well as a risk of injury to the ureters, which are the tubes that go from your kidneys down to your bladder. And again, it depends on your anatomy and what's going on at that time. If you've had previous surgeries where there's a lot of adhesions, or if there's a lot of endometriosis that causes scar tissue, and that can make the surgery more difficult and increase the risk of those injuries. A vaginal hysterectomy, usually those are smaller uteruses where there aren't many abnormalities there. So your risk in that case is injury to the bladder itself as well as injury to that ureter as well, and bleeding and pain. So some of the same side effects and risk for the surgery, but the total vaginal hysterectomy tends to be quicker, and there's less risk of pain, and people tend to go home the next day with the total vaginal hysterectomy and the total laparoscopic hysterectomy. So depending on the severity of the illness that's going on, and depending on the size of the womb, and that will either increase or decrease the risk of those conditions. I did want to ask Dawn a couple of questions, though. I was curious about her hysterectomy, if that's okay, Renee?
Dr. Boyd? Oh, certainly.
Okay. She brought up a couple of questions. Dawn, I don't know how old you are. I assume you're 40 and below. Is that correct?
Yes.
Or mid-40s?
Yes.
So I assume they also left your ovaries behind also.
No.
They took them?
They took the ovaries. So I had a total hysterectomy with oophorectomy. They left the cervix.
Okay, so that's key. That's really key, because sometimes in younger women who opt for hysterectomy because of endometriosis, we will still leave at least one ovary behind so that you won't go in menopause and have those side effects related to menopause.
I will interject though to say though that at the same time I also have fibroids and adenomyosis as well.
Okay.
So that also was a contributing factor.
Okay. All right. I wanted to make that distinction though, because when you said you still had pain afterwards and had issues afterwards and it didn't really help your symptoms, people have to realize that the endometriosis is being fed by hormones. So if your ovary is still left behind, the endometriosis can still be active because of the hormones that are still there. Now, that said, your endometriosis sounded like it was very severe. Already started having pain in between your periods. You already had adhesions, it sounds like. So you were having pain unrelated to your period. So your pain could have been due to not just hormonal related. It could have been due to the adhesions that formed from the endometriosis and the sequelae that related to the bowels and things around your womb at that time.
Well, I think I know why. Like I said, I was a very involved patient. So at the time that I had the hysterectomy or afterwards, I was also told, first of all, that the stage of my endo was not that severe. I was never given a stage, but I was always told that it was not severe.
Okay.
And then the second thing is though that after the hysterectomy, I was also told that there were some deposits still left in the pelvic wall itself.
Okay.
So those remained.
Okay. And last question, after the surgery, did they put you on any medications?
Yes. So I was put immediately onto hormone replacement therapy.
Okay. All right. So they were giving you hormones at that time. Understood. Okay. Understood.
Yeah. Right. I still take hormones to this day.
Yeah. to prevent the symptoms of menopause for people.
Yeah. Or at least to minimize them because they still get.
Yeah. All right, so we have a call. Gretchen, is the caller still there?
Yes, please. Good evening.
Good evening. Yes. Peace be on to each and everyone and to those wonderful ladies. My call is for Dawn. Hi, good evening, Doc. How are you?
Hi, good evening.
Yes, and to the wonderful ladies. Dawn, I salute you this afternoon, and I hope that a lot of persons listening. I know of one person who died and gone because they didn't want to part with their womb. And I salute you because this is something that for years a lot of people hid from each other. And some women insult women and men insult them also. And I'm glad that you were able to strong. You came out strong and let women know that it is not a death sentence and you can still live without a womb because it's a cradle for children. And after that, sometimes I have family that in the medical field, they say it's just a cradle. And when you get menopause, the cells get malignant and turn to cancer. So I'm glad that you came out and you speak, that you will encourage other persons who have problems and if they have to get a hysterectomy to go ahead. It's not a death sentence. I salute you this afternoon, ma'am. God bless you all. Stay safe.
Thank you very much. What I will add to that, though, is that just so that for clarity for the listeners as well, too, that the hysterectomy was totally my choice, knowing all of the risks, because, again, as I said, a hysterectomy is not a cure. So I still have endometriosis. So even though I have had the hysterectomy, I still have endometriosis. Because there are some implants that were not on the reproductive organs that are still there. So just to caution people as well, but it is best to make a more informed decision.
All right.
Yeah. Any decision that you have to make regarding your health should be an informed decision. Go ahead, Gretchen.
Yes, just want to clear these comments here so we can get back to your discussion. This one says, I'm supposing this is in reference to something said earlier. Did any doctor think about shutting down her cycle? This is also used. That's one. They also said some persons even bleed through the belly button and deposits can be found in other strange places. This next one says...
Yeah. Correct.
Well, okay, awesome. We have agreement there.
Yeah.
This one says, good evening, Doc. I congratulate the young lady. I hope you will be able to speak to men about hysterectomy. Some feel after that operation, a woman is incomplete. Thank you and stay safe. Somebody's laughing. And this other one says, I hope I can get this one pronounced. It says, good evening. I have a question, Doc. It's not about the topic, but I would like to know what is meant by atheromatous changes in the aorta. I hope I got that one right.
Atherosclerosis, yeah.
All right, wonderful. Mm-hmm. So somebody wants to know what's that about.
That's all you, Renee.
Oh, it's a buildup of cholesterol plaques in the large vessel that's found in the abdomen. It's the largest vessel. It runs from the heart all the way down to the abdomen. Then it divides into smaller arteries. And usually it's picked up when the person goes for another investigation because it can sometimes be seen on different, like for example, if you have an x-ray, they might be able to see some calcifications there. If you go for an ultrasound, you might be able to pick it up there. So it has to do with potential risks for cardiovascular disease complications. So things like heart attacks and strokes, because if you have a plaque in your aorta, chances are you have plaques in other places, and these plaques can either become thicker or they can rupture and then end up blocking arteries. You can get heart attacks and strokes, and therefore that's something that needs to be managed carefully with your physician or whomever has that problem.
All right.
Hope that answers the question.
Yes, I hope it does. All right, carry on smartly, Doc.
Hey, Don.
Yeah, I just wanted to answer one of the questions there. So one of them asked, like, if I had things to stop my cycle. Yes, I would have had many, many cycle-stopping things in between there. So I was on Provera, I was on Zoladex, I was on Danazol, I was on, what else? I had Mirena inserted. I was like on almost all of the types of treatment that there are for endometriosis. And like I said, nothing used to work. So the cycle did stop. The pain didn't though. So the pain didn't stop. Yes, the cycle stopped. So I was not bleeding, but the pain was still there. And then immediately post those treatments, it came back with a vengeance. So I would have had like a lot of days like after a Zoladex treatment, like a period of Zoladex treatments, that then I would get like the 30 day or the 28 day periods, where then a lot of what I call old blood will come out, because it was brown and very funky. And so like those are the most horrible periods that you could ever want to imagine. I did try all of that. It's not that I didn't. I would have, the hysterectomy basically was in my mind a last resort. And that was also because of where our technology was at the time. Because at the time that I had the hysterectomy, I'm not sure that we were doing excision surgeries here in Barbados as yet. And it's only like after that time that I heard about excision surgeries, because like the laparoscopies that I would have had before would have used ablation. And let me explain the difference. So ablation is kind of like where you burn it off from the top. So they are almost like you're shaving. So you know when you shave, the root is still there, so the hair grows back. Whereas when you pluck, you pluck in from the roots up, so they pluck in with more like the excision, and you kind of uproot that particular implant, but then it doesn't stop a new implant growing somewhere else. But there are a way higher success rate with the excision surgeries than with the ablation. So at that point in time, ablation was what I was treated with during the laparoscopies.
All right, Dr. Boyce, I know I told you to continue, but give me one more second. I have a question for Dr. Yarbrough. They say, good evening. After having a hysterectomy 4 years ago, I am still experiencing numbness above the cut. Is this normal?
Yes, it can be, because when you have to think about it, we're cutting into your skin. Your skin has several different nerve endings in those locations, and we've used numbing medicine at that time. Probably they use some locally as well, as you were put to sleep. For some women, when they heal, their scar tissues may not come back fully innervated, so they may not have the same sensation they had before, or it may feel numb. So this can be normal. It still can come back slowly, but it may not. It may not come back all the way. So you may have some sensation there, but not fully.
Okay, Dr.
Yeah,
Boyce.
And I can attest to that as well.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Sorry for interrupting you, Dawn.
Sorry, Renee. There was one more thing that I wanted to mention, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure. Go ahead. Go right ahead. Let's see if this is the same thing.
Oh, okay. So there was a person that also mentioned that the endometriosis can occur in other areas of the body. And that is true. Anywhere that blood flows, endometriosis can occur. So there are reports, and we actually, our association would have had a seminar just last night about where these different places that are affected. So you can have it, some people have it in the lungs or in the thoracic cavity. Some people even have it as far as the brain. And some people have it like in like feet and others places that are not the abdominal cavity. The other thing also that I would say to the cut question also, is because if the surgeon is not careful, when they are, you know, like sewing back up the wound, in terms of the cut, the surgery cut, if they're not careful and they actually can deposit endometrial cells in the actual cut itself as well. And so that can also present with pain and soreness in the cut itself, and thus causing it to be painful up to years after the surgery.
All right, Dr. Boyce, again, I'm going to interrupt you. Hope you don't mind. I believe this is a comment. I'm not sure it's a question. It's more like a comment. It says, good evening. I too had a hysterectomy and really have a severe bladder problem. And every time I go to pass water, I have to push up my vagina so the water can come out. Thank you. And I had the op since 1999. Is that normal?
Right, that's Dr. Yarbrough there.
Okay. Yeah. That's for Dr. Yarbrough.
Yeah, it does depend on the type of hysterectomy. Dawn mentioned that she still has her cervix. So the cervix and the uterus are actually attached to the bladder. The bladder sits right in front of those two parts of that organ. If the cervix is left behind, the cervix can help hold up the bladder in place, actually, that connective tissue that holds it in place. But sometimes after a hysterectomy, if the cervix is removed and the womb is removed completely, the bladder no longer has that support from the cervix or the womb. So gradually over time, the bladder can drop. And when it drops, it's usually the front of your vagina. And when you have to go to the bathroom, you may have to push that in order to urinate, because the bladder is dropping and it's kinking the urethra, which is a tube from the bladder to the outside. So is it normal? I'm not going to say it's normal, but it's understandable. How the function of it is understandable. And it can be treated. So you should definitely see your GP or your GYN to treat that, especially if it's bothersome to you.
All right, go ahead, Dr. Boyce.
It's been 20-something years, that so.
Right, you don't have to have surgery. There's non-surgical ways to treat that.
Yeah, hear the surgeon. You don't have to have surgery. There are nicer ways to treat.
There's non-surgical ways.
Yeah, we are here in the Better Health Radio Show. We are in with Dr. Courtney Yarbrough, obstetrician gynecologist, and we are also having a very wonderful and informative chat with Ms. Dawn Williams, co-founder of the Endometriosis and PCOS Association here in Barbados. Now, Dawn, we are almost approaching the end of March. Today is the 28th, I believe. So any more activities going on for the month that you want to share with us before we wind up?
Yeah. So we have two more events, both are virtual events. So there's one tomorrow night. Tomorrow, the 29th, Monday. So it's at 6 p.m. and it is a conversation on endometriosis and fertility with Dr. Roberta Corona. Mm-hmm. So that is going on tomorrow. I'll tell you the links that you can go to kind of register for these. And then on Wednesday, which is the 31st, I believe, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Wednesday, there is a regional conversation. It's entitled Endometriosis in the Caribbean, Our Experiences and Examining the Current Needs of the Region. And it's like a collaboration between us and various other sexual reproductive health organizations around the Caribbean. And yeah, so you can head over to our social media on Facebook. We are at EndoFacts, FACTS. And on Instagram, we are at ENDO and PCOSBB. So you can head over there and you should be able to see the events or the posters for those events. And then they should also have registration links as well.
Okay, so in our last few minutes, let's start with you, Dr. Yarbrough. What do you want our listeners to have as those key take-home points?
Can I interrupt Dr. Yarbrough for 1 second before she starts her summation?
I'm going to put you out.
Well, quickly before you put me out, this one says, good evening, Gregston, Dawn and the doctors. I am in my 70s and discussion like this is commendable. At work, you would imagine or suspected what was going on, but open discussion about a period, a no-no. Keep the good work up. And it's saying Dr. Grosvenor.
Very nice.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Grosvenor.
Okay. So one of the key things I wanted to mention that I didn't get in earlier was that I said before, endometriosis is genetic and it usually runs in families. That said, as soon as a young lady starts her periods and she's ovulating on a monthly basis, her pain may start from the very first day of her period. So if a young lady in her adolescent years are having severe pain, don't assume that that's normal. That's a misconception that we've been living with for years, that it's normal to have painful periods. If it's severe enough where she can't go to school, she's having vomiting, she's crying, and pain medicine's not working, that's not normal. And it may be endometriosis. And the earlier that we evaluate her and treat her, the better her symptoms will be. And maybe she won't have to go down the road of a hysterectomy at a younger age. That's my take home.
Yeah, thank you. Very, very useful. And now over to you, Dawn. We, again, thank you for being so open, for being so honest and vulnerable, because to come out in public radio and discuss your private business and air all your laundry, you know, it takes courage. So I want to say thank you. What do you want our listeners to have as their key points, their take home? Well, they're home already, so their keep at home point.
Keep at home.
Okay, so I don't want to repeat what Dr. Yarbrough said, but I definitely echo those sentiments. Pain is not normal. Debilitating pain is not normal, or any pain for that matter is not normal. What I would also say is that to the persons that are supporters or family or spouses or boyfriends or whoever, friends of persons that are going through these kind of challenges, even if it's not diagnosed. First of all, I would like to say that sensitivity is key. So please don't go around asking your girl friends or whoever, you know, like when they're getting children, or you know, like how come you not being pregnant yet and that kind of stuff. You never know what they're going through. You never know
And to stick a pin there, I do remember that there are some women that I've spoken with, and over the years, because they had to be, you know, maybe hospitalized with severe pain and so on, rumors were been started that they were having abortions, because people can be so unkind.
Oh my gosh.
And it wasn't just one person that relayed this. It was just something that was being said. You know, you see this person in all this pain, then they go to the hospital. Oh, they were pregnant and they had an abortion.
And not only that too, because endometriosis causes bloating, like severe bloating, which is what we call endobelly. And so therefore it can mimic the look of pregnancy. And so therefore, you know, like it's common to see women that have the, you know, the extended stomachs, and then the next month they are like back to normal. So as I said, don't ever assume, just be kind to everybody that you are interacting with. Be supportive. If you know, like if the person tells you that they are in pain or whatever, like just do whatever you can to make their lives easier. Bosses as well, you'll speak to you as well. Just believe what your employees are saying if they are complaining of pain, or if they are absent because of pain and that kind of stuff. It doesn't mean that they don't want to work necessarily. It just means sometimes it is actually legitimate. So the sensitivity is really what I would push, in addition to just normalizing or not normalizing pain.
Okay, Dawn, we want to wish you success and the safety in your upcoming surgery. Trust that this time around, things will improve tremendously for you. And thank you once again for sharing with us. As usual, Dr. Yarbrough, thank you. Thank you for being there. And Gretchen, let me say a pleasant good night to everybody. It has been my pleasure. I'm Dr. Renee Boyce, your host for the Better Health Radio Show, and looking forward to being with you again next week, Sunday.
Well, I'm glad I survived. I'm glad I survived the whole session without being put out. So I'm happy that we'll be able to come back next week, Sunday, to give you another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. This evening, we had Dr. Courtney Yarbrough, and we also had Dawn Williams as the guest on the Better Health Radio Show. Your host, of course, was Dr. Renee Boyce. Dr. Boyce, we will see you and hear you, God's willing, next week, Sunday at 6. Thank you kindly, and your guests. Have a good evening, everybody.
Bye, everybody.